Hey everybody, welcome back to the MMA Vivisection with me, Zane Simon, and my co-host, as always, Connor Rebush. We are here right now talking about UFC 299, going down at the Kaseya Center in Miami, Florida, on March 9th. Headlined by a bantamweight fight, Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera, alongside a lightweight top contenders bout between Dustin Poirier and Benoit Saint-Denis. We're here talking about the prelim card right now, though, which, since somebody brought it up, I gotta say, is really fully a better full card prelims down than most UFC fight nights.
Yeah, these prelims would be a pretty damn good fight night card.
Yep. You could honestly just do the whole prelim card as a fight night, and it would be a really strong offering.
Yeah.
So the featured prelim is a heavyweight fight, Curtis Blaydes, Jailton Almeida, and the rubber has already met the road several times for Blaydes at this point, and he has sort of, you know, failed to clear the last hurdle, to mix metaphors, terribly.
I thought you were trying to lean into the Condom Depot sponsorship.
That's right.
The rubber has met the road.
That's right. Brought to you by Condom Depot.
The used rubber has met the road. Right outside my apartment, actually.
What'd you use it for?
Wasn't mine.
Okay.
She's there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't believe you had sex with it, so.
God, no.
All right. Yeah, so I was saying, Blaydes has already been in this position several times before. Mm-hmm. A loss here, you know, maybe it sets him back a little further, but it doesn't really change a lot from what we already know about Curtis Blaydes.
He's gatekeeper to the elite at heavyweight for the time being.
Gatekeeper to a title shot, even. You don't even have to say elite, but he's like a
pretty
gatekeeper to the top two or three spots in the division.
Yeah, there's only ever three good heavyweights at a time. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy just barely on the outside of that field.
He's as good as you can be at heavyweight.
Without being a champion.
Without having just done, and who knows, a chips fall slightly differently, he would have earned a title shot by now.
Yeah, exactly. One still has to expect he will get a title shot some point in the next 5 years.
It seems inevitable. I mean, give him another 8 years to mature. He'll be just entering his prime.
That's right. But this is a rubber meets the road fight for Jailton Almeida, I gotta feel like.
Absolutely.
Because he went out there and he beat Derek Lewis, which is nice and all. But he did not look like Sergei Spivak beating Derek Lewis. Or Sergei Pavlovich beating Derek Lewis.
Yeah.
Or Cyril Gane beating Derek Lewis. Or even, you know, or Daniel Cormier beating Derek Lewis.
Yeah.
He looked like a fighter who has been insulated by his grappling and his athleticism for long enough that the rest of his game is severely undercooked for what it should be.
Yeah. I mean, even I think you could argue his wrestling is undercooked.
Yeah.
That is very much shored up by the athleticism. He's, excuse me, a more athletic Muhammad Makhachev.
Yeah.
That's pretty much who he is.
And because, yeah, I mean, this is a dude who, you know, sure, he's only 32. But he has been in the game for 12 years now.
Yeah,
he took his first MMA fight.
It's already funny to say only 32. That's like, oh, time's running out for any other division.
Yeah, but for heavyweight, you know, he's got another functional decade if he's going to stay at heavyweight. Yep. But it is crazy to see. He made his debut at welterweight in 2012.
That is nuts.
Right?
2012, I guess. Yeah, he was.
He was 20.
20? Oh, yeah, 20 years old. So it makes perfect sense that he's gotten so much bigger.
Yep. But for a fighter whose dad is a boxing coach and who grew up in a boxing gym.
Yeah.
And who has been in MMA, fighting in MMA for 12 years now, off and on. You know, yeah, he took two fights in 2012 and didn't take another one until 2016. But he's still been in and around combat sports all that time. He is a very good athlete with a very good grappling game and very little else.
Very little else. It makes you question how good his relationship with his father could possibly be.
It does, honestly.
Like, he hasn't acquired any of those. I mean, is there still just a very pervasive thing in MMA that somebody with access, one would assume, to... I mean, I don't know if his father's a good boxing coach or whatever, does some kind of boxing training. Is there still just this pervasive belief that, like, oh, that doesn't apply among certain fighters? That they just go in thinking, like, well, MMA is different. So, like, it's not worth it to learn boxing.
Yeah, I kind of think so.
They're wrong.
I also think that it tends to be, like, this is going to sound awful, but I'm going to say it. Boxing is hard.
Yes.
And wrestling and jiu-jitsu are very hard, too.
They're hard in different ways.
But they're hard in different ways. And I still think that there is a very real pipeline of guys who get into other combat sports after finding out they can't box. You know?
For sure.
And MMA seems to be the path, honestly, like, it is a path taken up via jiu-jitsu, it feels like, more often than anything else still.
Like, wrestling too, I mean.
Wrestling is...
It's a very natural way to continue doing your combat sport of choice if you're a wrestler, because there's no way to make money doing it
out
of college. In college, for that matter.
Wrestling, or for MMA, it still feels like the pipeline to MMA is still largely through wrestling and jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And so Jailton Almeida, if he grew up in a boxing gym, maybe he just very clearly was not that great a boxer.
Because if you could box and you enjoy it, why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
Why bother with all the other MMA stuff?
And he got into jiu-jitsu. Like, you know, I'm reading even just his wiki bio. It says, you know, he ended up following his father's footsteps into fighting, beginning by training boxing at age 6 and BJJ at 11. And so it's like, okay, did he, you know, start out boxing as a kid and just be like, wow, this sucks. I'm going to try something else. And then he did jiu-jitsu, and jiu-jitsu is like the gateway to MMA.
Yeah.
You know? And so his game is built around that jiu-jitsu gateway. Whatever boxing training he did just got left behind.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny, too, though, because, like, I think there is still that pervasive, like, it just doesn't apply idea. Because you see, I remember watching it, the shoulder programming for the Lewis fight. And he's there with his dad, and he's there hitting mitts and, mm-hmm. like, doing pad drills. And you can see the training that he's had, like, with that. I'm not saying he's, like, some phenom or something. But it looks pretty natural for him to hit mitts and do pad drills. Looks like somebody who's done it before.
Strange. There's just...
But it just does not translate into his game at all.
Because you still hear comments from, like, commentators and such when they're like, well, you know, like, criticizing the quote-unquote boxing stance and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, well, you got to do that. Like, these things have real legs, these, like, old beliefs that, like, oh, head movement doesn't work in MMA. Despite boundless evidence to the contrary and the great number of elite fighters today who are really remarkable for their boxing skill.
Mm-hmm.
Ilia Topuria being just the most recent of them. That dude is a boxer. That's his MMA style.
Yeah.
He's a boxer. And look how effective it makes him. But I do wonder if there is still just this feeling in certain corners where it's like you could literally have a boxing coach in your corner and even he would be like, well, you can't do boxing. It's MMA.
Yeah.
And it's just wrong. Boxing is fighting. It may be restricted by rules, but there are principles of good fighting that apply to MMA very directly in boxing. Yeah.
That's one of the big reasons, too, that I just often so often feel like, you know, the boxer turned MMA fighter is really just somebody that can't box.
Yeah.
You know,
well, there's way more potential to make money doing boxing. So, yeah, you stick with that.
Yeah. The potential to make money is higher. The freedom is higher. And, you know, yeah, if you're good at boxing, like, why wouldn't you stick with that? And so I tend to feel like it looks like boxing doesn't work in MMA a lot because the guys who cross over that way just don't know how to box. Or the other thing that you see is the boxers who are good boxers that cross over to MMA are so insulated by the confidence that being a good boxer instills in you. Because, you know, boxing has had a long time to develop its own culture, mm-hmm. and its own like gym culture, training culture, and all that.
Many and different cultures even, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a very clear, like, the boxing culture is very much a hype man culture. It is.
Certainly in America.
If you are a star talent, yeah, certainly in America, if you are a star talent, you're going to be surrounded by people all the time telling you like, oh, you are amazing. Mm-hmm. You are unbeatable. You are unbreakable. Nobody can touch you. And so boxers then get into MMA and you suddenly see like the confidence of a person who just thinks that they are just going to be able to fight.
Yeah. And you walk into the gym and the coach is like, silent slave. You
know, yeah. Like,
you're like part of a team, even when you're a star.
Yeah.
Still in a lot of MMA spheres.
So yeah. Like you see Clarissa Shields out there, like struggling with absolute scrubs.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, you get the feeling like this is somebody who spent the first, you know, 15 years of, or 20 years of their training career just being told that they were the God's gift to fighting.
Yeah. Or she got to that point, like all her formative years.
Yeah.
Preceded the hype. And now it's just the hype is around her maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know. I mean, all sort of besides the point, it's just, the thing is that Jailton Almeida comes from some kind of boxing background and has never demonstrated any boxing skill whatsoever.
Yeah.
And in the UFC.
And in that fight with Derek Lewis, like, just looked skittish about it.
Yeah.
Like, did not look like he trusted his hands at all. And so this is his rubber meets the road moment. Because, like, Curtis Blaydes is not a good boxer. He's not a super durable heavyweight. He's not, you know, he doesn't have a glass jaw, but
yeah,
he's not so durable that he cannot be stopped. Huge punchers can knock him out. It takes a huge puncher, but they've been able to do it.
A heavyweight has plenty of those.
Yeah. But he's a better boxer than Jailton Almeida.
No question.
At this point, like, the last fight he had of any real consequence against Chris Daukaus, where he got to fight for more than 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he actually looked like a guy who really pretty trusted the process he had gone through and trusted mm-hmm. the striking that he'd been taught.
Shit, he was outboxing Derek Lewis until he decided to go for a takedown and dropped into a shot.
Yeah. So then it just is like a question of like, can Jailton Almeida out-wrestle Curtis Blaydes?
I'm going to say no.
And I feel like he can't either.
Yeah. There is the worrying possibility that, like a lot of wrestlers in MMA, Curtis Blaydes' defense is actually not very good.
Yeah, it could be.
And it has just literally never been tested because nobody else at heavyweight even tries to wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do, like, you barely recognize it as an attempt at wrestling. Almeida's wrestling is not good. His shots are very sloppy.
Yeah.
But he, unlike somebody like Muhammad Makhachev, he does have the athleticism to drive and to build momentum on somebody to make to get somebody down.
Yeah, like, you know what Curtis Blaydes' takedown defense is in the UFC?
Tell me.
33%.
Because of what? One person.
He's been taken down four times.
Oh, really? More than I thought.
Once by Alexander Volkov.
Okay.
For a whopping 46 seconds of control, while Curtis Blaydes took him down 14 times for 20 minutes of control. And three times in his second UFC fight against Cody East.
Wow. For a total of 24 seconds of control.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this is the thing with a lot of wrestlers. Phil and I were talking about this. I think a lot of them, first of all, you don't, you do have to adjust a typical wrestling stance, I think, to be able to strike effectively. Like, you cannot just be fully, like, leaned past your front foot with your knees super bent. Like, you couldn't be in, say, like a jiu-jitsu stance and do MMA.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not, it doesn't translate.
No.
And so I think that's part of the reason that there are quite a lot of wrestlers who have shockingly poor takedown defense. They're just not in their fundamental position. Neither are they at the range where usually they would have all of this, like, tactile feedback to clue them in, all this stimulus to clue them in that the takedown is coming. When you're in, like, a hand fighting, foreheads touching kind of range, that's the where a lot of them are used to actually sniffing out the shot and stopping it immediately.
Yep.
But I also think a lot of wrestlers justifiably just don't really worry about it because they know they can scramble.
Yep.
They just think,
you know, I am a better wrestler than these people. I'm just not going to get taken down. I don't need to worry about
that. But also, like, my wrestling game doesn't stop when I hit the floor.
No. Yeah.
That's wrestling too. I'll just keep wrestling and get back. And without remembering it at all, I'm going to assume based on the stats, that's what happened against Cody East. Like, got taken down and was like, whatever.
Yeah.
Clearly didn't get controlled.
No.
So yeah, I mean, if he has that attitude, if he is taken down by Almeida, certainly there's more of a possibility for Almeida converting that into something.
Yeah, hitting a back take with Blaydes is like, oh, I'll just scramble out of it.
Almeida's got positional grappling, but Blaydes is a good mat wrestler. He's bigger than Almeida. And you got to assume he comes into this fight thinking, like, the only thing I have to do is not let him take me down.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, I just feel like it just doesn't look like a matchup Almeida has any tools to actually really reliably win.
Not after that that Derek Lewis fight.
Even before that, wasn't doing anything on the feet. He would have still been totally reliant on out wrestling Curtis Blaydes in order to beat him.
Yeah.
And it's just the one guy in the division where, like, that is not the strategy that makes sense.
Yep.
All of Curtis Blaydes' losses have been a huge puncher knocking him out.
Yep.
So
literally every single time he has lost has just been the hardest puncher in the world at that time. Every single one, like the hardest hitting guy out there.
Yep.
Landing a shot on him. And that's not Jailton Almeida.
Pavlovich, Lewis, and Ganu. And a couple other massive punchers have tried and not actually gotten him out of there.
Yeah.
You absolutely have to pick Curtis Blaydes. And I think if he can stop the shots and it doesn't just turn into wrestling against the fence, which seems highly likely, then if he gets any time at range, I would not put it past him to knock Almeida out.
Mm-hmm.
Because he actually can box a little bit, and Almeida can't box at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, if Almeida gasses the way he did against Lewis,
yeah,
he could be in huge trouble.
Yeah. Blades can knock people out. He's done it before.
Yep. Yeah, I'll take Blades too. I think this is, like I say, this fight doesn't really do anything for Blades in terms of winning or losing. He's still going to be pretty much the same guy in the same place. But for Almeida, this is his rubber meets the road moment of like, you have set yourself up with a pretty limited skill set that has cut through a whole lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
This is your point where now people just, you know, it probably just isn't going to work anymore. Do you have, what are you going to bring to the table here?
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't even use the word anymore, because if he loses to Blaze, he's going to go right back to feeding people that he can easily out grapple, you know?
Yeah. But I just mean, you know,
Blaze is the guy.
Yeah, he is. Because it's true. I mean, like, you could even argue that Almeida might have a pretty good, you know, a pretty good shot at beating Ciryl Gane and Tom Aspinall.
Yeah, yeah. Aspinall, you know, seems like the harder, but Ciryl Gane? Sure. Sure.
Yeah, we know Ciryl Gane just got taken down an insta-sub by John Jones.
Yeah.
And Aspinall, he's a better wrestler and grappler, but he's also a very aggressive fighter who just sort of naturally over-pursues things.
Yeah, there's a shot there, at least. I just don't really... Curtis Blaydes just looks like a wall.
Yeah.
To Almeida's game.
It does. Interestingly enough, I think probably just because Blaydes has lost enough and Almeida hasn't, they are dead even.
Oh.
Jelton Almeida opened at minus 105. It's currently at minus 108. Blaydes opened at minus 105. It's currently minus 102.
I just don't see it.
I don't see it either. It just feels like a very good fight for Curtis Blaydes.
Yep.
All right, that brings us to a woman's flyweight bout, Caitlin Serminara.
Formerly against Chookagian.
Yep, formerly Nee Chookagian.
That's right.
Against Macy Barber. And
this is a fun style matchup. This is a clash.
This is a great fight. This is a great style clash. This is a fight that I would have pretty confidently picked Chookagian to win 2 years ago.
Yes.
And I am not going to pick her now. And it has nothing to do with anything Chookagian has done.
Mm-hmm.
Chookagian has, to her credit, I think, much better than much better than most fighters, Chookagian has figured out what is wrong with her game and tried to fix it.
Yeah.
She is a fighter who started out very much in the capital T technical style of fighter.
Yep.
You know, I think from really probably from day one, she was a fighter who wanted to be out at distance, throwing a lot of volume, trying to, you know, put strikes together in combination with craft born of maybe a pretty limited training base that she was given. Maybe just also having started late in life in combat sports. You know, she's been at it for a decade. She's 35 now. I would assume that she got into... she started training karate when she was 4, actually.
Yeah.
But she's turned to amateur MMA in 2012, so 2 years before she went pro. And so I would assume that that amateur MMA training that she got in starting in 2012 was pretty limited, you know?
Probably mostly just learning to grapple, with the assumption that she had some kind of striking background. She probably was a smoother striker than most of the women she was training with, just to begin with.
And just getting some basic MMA gym kickboxing class training that was not really well tuned to actual competitive round winning striking.
She really had a genuine point fighting style.
Yeah. And Then she lost to Valentina Shevchenko after, you know, a solid 6 years of competitive MMA. And Shevchenko pretty clearly just dressed her down. It was just like, you know, you don't have the power. You don't have a style that is going to handle a good athlete, basically. And Chookagian, ever since then, has been working very hard on planting her feet and sitting down in the pocket and making her strikes count. And it hasn't won her every fight. That she's still not the best athlete out there. And bigger punchers can push her off of her game and get her back to the leaf blower point style. But she is working a lot harder to be a much meaner, more aggressive fighter. And it's great. Like, that is the right move. It's the right thing for her to do. And for Barber, she has approached MMA from a very, like, I have, you know, she really got the bad gym raised up in a bad gym MMA style, where, like, she just could not strike, could not wrestle, could not grapple, but knew how to be a strong and aggressive. Really kind of, you get the, like, very what's the light heavyweight fighter's name that we've talked about a lot, who just
I need you to finish the sentence for me. I'm here for you, buddy.
Brown Bear is his nickname.
Oh, that doesn't help.
Devin Clark.
Oh. His nickname is Brown Bear?
Yep.
What?
Devin Brown Bear Clark.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
You should have just said thighs.
I get that.
Devin Clark.
Yeah. She gives off a real Devin Clark vibe.
Yeah.
Where you look at this and you're like, here's a really powerful athlete that has just been trained really poorly for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't help that she started out with, like, a more powerful version of the similar kind of base to Chookagian, and has since, I assume, gotten all of her striking practice with Team Alpha Male.
Yeah, but she didn't ever really have the wavy arm thing. It was...
No, but she was like a dexterous kicker. She was out there trying to do karate shit to people, and now...
Yeah, but it was all swing and cling for her. Like, it was, here's an overhand, I am going to run into the clinch and try and bully people around with my physicality, because there's not a lot of other parts there. But over the past couple of years, she has at least calmed down a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And she is channeling her meanness, which I think is the best asset that she kind of got brought up with early in her career.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like she has, you know, she has the right kind of physicality to take a fight to Chookagian, to take the kind of fight to Chookagian, or to Sermonara, rather, that Fiorot did, where Fiorot just, like, Chookagian started out in that fight doing really well, just sitting down on strikes, getting in the pocket, mixing it up, being first, and making a good fight out of it. And Fiorot just started sitting down on bigger, heavier shots and hitting Chookagian harder. And Chookagian had to kind of take a step back and find her way, you know, drift towards that old style where she's throwing things just from, like, 6 inches too far away.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara is not as clean a striker as Fiorot.
No.
But she also has less of the wavy arm volume that Fiorot also has. Fiorot herself is a little bit of a just sort of rote pump something out.
Yeah. Barbara throws with intent and hits hard. She has every reason to throw with intent. She also
Mean clinch game.
Yeah, exactly. She's able to fully embrace the sloppy fighter's tendency to crash in when you commit to something, because she's perfectly happy to tie up with somebody where her strength and her power are, if anything, more effective. Which to me also looks like a good answer to a lot of Chukagian's kicks. I mean, she got Hibush down at least once off of a kick. Just by like trying to swing at her when she was kicking, catching the leg and just crashing her down to the floor. She's just a bully. And so, yeah, I mean, I think there could be substantial stretches of this fight where Chukagian is flummoxing her.
Yeah.
And making Barbara look really clumsy, because she is. She's still a really, she's gotten better, no doubt. She's gotten more comfortable. Her stance is better. She closes the distance with her feet under her a lot more consistently than she used to.
Yep.
And she
still throws from her shoulders.
Yeah. She's still an awkward striker, but you know, like the reason that that Chukagian was not committing to her strikes for so long is because like she didn't want someone to get their hands on her.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a fight that like sort of illustrates that problem. Because there is just a certain level of physicality where, you know, and I'm not saying it would be good for Chukagian to do a total point fight, because like you need to be doing something with authority to stop Barbara from just straight up chasing you.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's just Barbara's physicality and aggression and her willingness to tie up and use that power to muscle people around and take people down and smash them against the fence and then hit them with short, powerful shots. You know?
Yeah.
Chukagian is a better kickboxer than Amanda Hibush. Certainly less just easily hittable, but I think a considerably worse wrestler and grappler.
Yeah, maybe not wrestler. She can do all right when she's the dominant, stronger wrestler.
Yeah.
But not any kind of like interesting grappler or and she doesn't have the speed or power.
Yeah.
You know.
So I think it'll be a tale of two fights. I mean, I really do think there'll be long portions where Chukagian is just looking way better.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it'll be a bit of a Chito Vera kind of dynamic where I expect Barbara's big moments to be so much bigger.
Yeah, that's really it. Is that I think the kind of fight Chukagian wants to have is the best kind of fight for Barbara, which is to sit down and like be powerful.
Yeah.
And to land good, clean, hard punches to make your opponent pay. That's the best kind of fight for Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of fight that Chukagian then has to revert to having out of that could be frustrating for Barbara, but I just don't. I think Barbara is just a little too fast and too unpredictable.
And she's just willing to get hit to hit somebody back. It's not as good a deterrent. You need really good mechanics for it to be. This is what I mean when I'm always talking about like positional boxing. Like,
yeah,
it's not just about getting somebody's respect. It is about like putting yourself in a position where they literally can't get through your jab to reach you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you have to immediately adjust again. You have to keep creating that kind of angle. You have to hide yourself while attacking them. And I don't think Chukagian has that subtle a boxing game.
Uh-oh.
I think it has really benefited her that she's learned to sit down and throw with power, and that will work against a lot of people. But with somebody who's just I almost don't even want to call Barbara a bully, because she's a comeback artist too.
Yeah.
Like she is just a really competitive person who just refuses to lose easily. And when somebody will just have blood pouring out of their nose and their mouth and just happily continue eating shots in order to give one back or get their hands on you, that's when you really need super sound mechanics.
Yep.
Attitude alone is not going to stop them from, is not going to make them like respect the sort of, the types of exchanges you're trying to dictate. They're just going to crash through and hit you back. So, yeah, it's a very cool style clash. And I really, as much as we've said this, I don't think it's impossible that Chukagian wins.
No, no. Or if she can just
Serminara, I'm never going to.
Yeah.
Chukagian's too identifiable a name. I'm sorry, Caitlin.
Yeah. It is definitely a fight where if she can, like, just keep Barber chasing her a little, she might easily just outpoint her. Like,
but she can't run away.
Yeah.
She's gotta be subtle with it, gotta be controlled and settled, even in the evasive movement. It's just the kind of matchup where it feels like Chukagian would have to be really very perfect.
Yep.
And quite lucky to not just have one big moment turning the momentum completely.
Chukagian opened at plus 183, is currently at plus 173. Barber opened at minus 207, currently minus 195. All right, that brings us to a lightweight bout. Mateusz Gamrot, Rafael dos Anjos. And, this doesn't feel like a good fight for RDA at this point.
RDA's old. He's old.
That's really it. Yeah.
Because the thing is almost in a obviously the bars are much higher. This isn't heavyweight, but almost in an Almeida Blades kind of way. There was a time where I would have looked at Gamrot's style and been like, can that beat RDA?
Yeah.
You're gonna like fly around on the back foot and let him pressure you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're gonna out wrestle him. Like that seems like stylistically a long shot.
Yeah. It does.
And it's at 155. The division where RDA style is still somewhat functional because at least he's big and strong.
Yep.
But I think RDA has definitely slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was at welterweight where the rules are slightly different, but you can't help thinking back to that fight with Michael Chiesa. You know, much bigger than Gamrot.
Yeah.
But Gamrot is fast. He's a good athlete. He's a great takedown artist. And Chiesa just blasted RDA off his feet.
Yeah.
You know, likewise, like Colby Covington hit him with a ton of takedowns before he sort of settled into that fight. It took him a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it took Colby kind of gassing a bit.
Yeah.
So there's just more room for wrestlers to succeed against RDA than they're used to. And Gamrot, you know, he's not a young man himself, but he's still very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to give him full marks. He actually did some boxing against Rafael Fiziev.
Yeah.
He used his jab.
Yep.
You know, his footwork was a lot more settled down. It wasn't just the same old, run around and then dart in with either a right hand or like a low single.
Yeah.
He looked a lot more controlled and it was quite effective. He was beating Fiziev even before the injury.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm going to take Gamrot as the functionally younger man, really. But, you know, like Gamrot is still a guy who, like, we've still never really seen him control somebody on the ground.
No, it's true. It's true.
So like, I don't know, like all of his wins are just really close. It's hard for me to ever feel super confident in Gamrot, even when the style matchup does look good. And I'm not sure that this is fundamentally an easy style matchup for him.
Yeah, no, it's not so much it's an easy style matchup as I just think that, like, RDA is at a point where I think he's lost enough of a step that Gamrot's speed and stick-to-itiveness is going to just be a huge problem.
Yeah.
And RDA has always been able to get put on the back foot by wrestlers himself, be able to be driven backwards.
Yeah, I mean, if Gamrot, oh my God, I didn't even think of this. It just occurred to me. I was just praising his jab against Fazeev. RDA is a southpaw. He's not going to jab.
Yeah.
He's not going to jab. I'd be very happy for him if he did, but why would I expect it?
Yeah.
Yeah, if Gamrot could somehow pressure RDA, but I'm not sure what tools he has to do that.
Yeah, it's true. I just think that he's going to be able to drive. I think he's going to be able to get in on takedowns and drive RDA to the cage. And then be able to wear on him and start taking him down. And maybe RDA will get back up. But it'll just be a wearing fight that Gamrot can just kind of like. This might be a wall install seatbelt fight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, where he's got a back body lock on on RDA that RDA just can't quite break. And it's just stuck on him.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel.
People have had success with the clinch wrestling against RDA for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's just, you know, like you can literally watch Mateusz winning a fight and it's still hard to explain exactly like what the winning game plan is sometimes.
Yeah. It's true.
He's just very quick and tireless and does lots of stuff.
It's just like, you know, you can also look at all the wins that RDA has gotten lately.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have a very particular look to them.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's, you know, it's guys like Brian Barberena and Kevin Lee and old Robbie Lawler and Neil Magny. And then it's close fights. You know, it's Hanada Moicano on a day's notice.
Yeah.
Or a razor thin fight with Paul Felder in 2020.
Yeah, that was already nearly 4 years ago.
Yeah. And anyone who's young and fresh and is sort of like in their prime and competitive can just kind of find a lot of ways to keep RDA from taking over fights the way he used to.
Mm-hmm. 39 years old.
Yeah. Because there's never been like, you know, unless you're just a bad grappler or a grappler who is capable of... Somebody who's capable of just completely melting down on the mat, like Barberena or Lee or Magny, where, you know, Lee's a good grappler, but he's also just capable of totally melting down in fights.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not capable of melting down, then RDA has a lot of trouble being a dangerous fighter in his fights anymore. And if he's not going to be dangerous, then he's going to provide a lot of chances for guys to just kind of keep in the fight and see if he can match their pace.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to lean with Gamrot on that. I just have to. You know?
Yep.
Anyway. Because, yeah, like if you turn back the clock on this for RDA and you're like, oh, yeah, RDA of 5 years ago or something, then I'd be like, man, how does Gamrot get this done? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's going to be one of those fights where I think, like, you might be watching and being like, what really good functional offense has Gamrot even had in this fight? But I guess I have to score it for him.
Mm-hmm. That's how a lot of them are.
Yep. Gamrot opened at -312. He's currently at -441. RDA opened at +263, is currently at +354. All right. That brings us to a bantamweight bout, Pedro Munhoz, Kyler Phillips. And I'm glad you... Or no, I have to talk about this first.
Yeah, this is you, bitch.
God damn it. I don't... This is a great fight. I don't like it.
No, why not?
I mean, I like it. Like, it'll be fun. But I don't like trying to break it down. Because Kyler Phillips is sort of... There are like two Kyler Phillips settings.
Mm-hmm.
One is lateral movement, and 1-2s. And the other is big wild stuff as he leaps into the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And the big wild stuff as he leaps into the pocket gets him caught. And the lateral movement in 1-2s can make him look like an absolute world beater at times. And very predictable and just sort of grab bag trying whatever at other times.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, you have Pedro Munhoz, who is sort of the picture of predictability itself. You know, especially increasingly, he is going to go out there and look to low kick his opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the question is, can somebody draw a brawl out of him? And he can win a brawl still. And he's still got a chin. And he's still powerful and all that. But it's, you know, it's more difficult for him to be the Pedro Munhoz who knocked out Cody Garbrandt, or even more impressively, beat Brett Johns, you know, and Rob Font. It takes a lot more pushing to get that out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Kyler Phillips will create that fight. I also don't know if he will create enough offense to win even without creating that fight.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose a big question is, how does Kyler Phillips deal with low kicks?
Yeah.
That being such a consistent part of Pedro Munhoz's game.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't really had to deal with many good kickers.
No.
It's a real question because, like you said, I think the back foot boxing game, which allows him to look his best, is fairly rudimentary.
Yeah, like he's one of those guys that you look at his natural athleticism.
Yeah,
and that is what always leaps off the page first. So when he is doing the back foot boxing thing and moving around, and when he's getting his shots off, it looks really impressive because it's so fast.
Yeah, and he's got, one thing, Phillips does have good timing and rhythm, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a very bouncy fighter when he's in movement mode. And like that right hand he dropped Honey Barcelos with, came off of this little awkward, like, half-beat bounce-in entry as he was moving around on the back foot. But then you also see the actual limitations of his footwork when somebody is able to stay on top of him. And he can get put into a Barboza-esque galloping mode.
Yeah.
And it's not that difficult to imagine somebody just running him into a ton of low kicks as he tries to hop around the outside of the cage.
Mm-hmm. And because, like, you know, you look at Phillips, it's interesting, like, you look at the strikes per minute that as tracked on UFC stats or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty similar. Like, Phillips is coming at 5.36, Pedro Munhoz 5.45. But at the same time, like, Phillips, the most strikes he's ever landed in a fight against Marcelo Rojo, really, he landed 80 in under three rounds, in 2 rounds and a bit. Like, that is also, even with a, like, lower output these days, or lower, you know, somewhat more reluctant feeling Pedro Munhoz these days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be a pretty low output Pedro Munhoz fight, even lately. Like, he landed 113 strikes against Marlon Vera in 3 rounds. He landed, it was 60 against Chris Gutierrez, but, you know, it was 74 against Dominic Cruz, 70, 5 against Jose Aldo, 94 against Jimmy Rivera, 166 against Frankie Edgar. Like, that he's still at a pretty even clip. It was a lot earlier in his career where he was less active because activity was less the norm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Pedro Munoz, or I don't know that Kyler Phillips is even like that well geared to just out foot race Pedro Munoz, you know?
Yeah.
So, or Munoz. So I'm not sure. Like, that's why I say I don't like this fight, because I don't really like the dynamics of where either fighter is likely to spend their time. Like a Kyler Phillips galloping around,
mm-hmm,
and a Pedro Munoz low kicking. I don't know.
I mean, one thing I will say is, mm-hmm, that Pedro Munoz is one of the most hittable fighters.
He is.
In the division.
He is.
There is going to be a lot of opportunity for a significantly younger and just more athletic fighter, I think, to just time him on the way in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to me, it's like if Munoz can like cripple Phillips with low kicks without just getting crushed on the counter every time he throws one, that would be something. But if I don't expect that to happen, I just look at Phillips and I think he's bigger and faster. I think he's probably just a harder hitter, perhaps just because he's much faster and he's got that tricky rhythm in his game.
I don't know if he's a harder hitter, but he's definitely faster. Yeah.
Yeah.
The speed counts for a lot.
Yeah. And as much as Munoz sort of defaults to the role of pressure fighter, I don't know that he's really great at it.
No, he's not.
As a cage cutter, Aljamain Sterling was able to outbox him a lot on the back foot. Of course, a much higher bar, but that Jose Aldo fight, he didn't have anything resembling effective pressure in that fight.
A late career Frankie Edgar did.
Edgar, too.
Outmaneuver.
Yes.
Pedro Munoz.
Yeah. So just somebody doing that, but landing with more authority and more commitment. I'm kind of leaning Kyler Phillips on this one.
Yeah, I just can't, like, I can't help the feeling of, like, you know, when somebody does chase him down, like Barcelos and Song Yadong did late in fights, and neither, you know, Barcelos is not very high output, and Song Yadong is not a very good pressure fighter.
Yeah.
They did find they found Phillips pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, he'll gas, too, because he's not efficient.
Yeah.
Is so much energy required to do his version of back foot fighting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't like the way I feel like Pedro Munoz is going to approach it, but I also just don't like the way, I don't like the way either guy is going to approach this fight is what I feel like. And that's why I don't like it.
I like it as a matchup. I mean,
I like it as a matchup, but I do wonder if it's going to end up being a very frustrating low simmer fight.
Yeah, that could be the case.
I guess I'll take Phillips for the mobility and the speed, but you know, if Munoz can get him second guessing himself at all the way he did Chris Gutierrez,
mm-hmm,
then
That's a thing with Gutierrez, though.
It is.
We may not have been fully aware of it before then. We've now had it reinforced.
Yeah.
That man just gets like
frustrated. Gets in his own head.
Yeah. He gets really in his own head. I don't think that's a problem for Phillips.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah. And otherwise, that is Pedro's only real win since 2021. Get that fight where they shot Jimmy Rivera.
Yep.
You know, granted, the Sean O'Malley fight, most people thought he won the Cheeto fight. So it's like, you know, with a good style matchup, it's not like he's incapable of competing with people these days, but.
Yeah, I don't think he's fallen off a cliff. He's just.
But man, I mean, just think about the fact that I know it's Dominic Cruz and that man has reached the mountaintop. But like, that was a Dominic Cruz one fight removed from getting exploded by Chito Vera.
Yeah.
A very old Dominic Cruz, really. And he was able to flummox Pedro Munhoz just by moving around him.
Yeah. Speed and movement really is the killer for Munhoz. His foot speed is not there. And his footwork is not there. His
footwork isn't up to snuff.
All right. Odd on the fight.
Mm-hmm. That's all. That's why I'm picking Phillips.
Munhoz opened at +213. He's currently at +178. Phillips opened at -245. He's currently at -201. All right. We got to kick things into higher gear. Light heavyweight bout, Iwan Kutalaba, Felipe Lins. What do you got?
I think we have Michelle Pereira, Michal Oleksijic next, do we not?
No, yeah, sorry, I was reading the wiki, and Pereira...
When are you going to learn, Zane?
Pereira, Oleksijic, you're right.
Yeah, this is sort of like a stupider version of the last fight.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Oleksijic, I think a sloppier Pedro Munhoz.
Yep.
Michelle Pereira, a more baffling, although at this point decently crafty
kind of more technically settled than Kyler Phillips at this point.
Yeah.
It may be a more technically limited gain.
Yeah.
That he doesn't do as much when it's either like wild, crazy, non-functional stuntman fighting, or it's a jab cross and a body kick.
But he really hasn't done that shit in a while now.
Yeah, the stunt fighting stuff is gone. So you're really looking at jab, cross, low kick, body kick.
Yeah, and I think he has, much as I loathe it, principle, he has, as you're saying, he has settled into the new approach.
Yeah.
Decently well.
Yeah. He became a little capital T technical, but he's so certainly fast, so powerful, that it's actually working for him still.
Yeah, and he also I was most impressed in some of his recent fights. Which one was it? The Pineda fight. It was against
or Fialho.
I think it was maybe Ponzinibbio.
Yeah.
Who granted is not as, or maybe it was the Fialho fight. I don't know. It was one of the recent ones. I realized Michelle Pineda actually. One thing he has is good instincts.
Yeah.
Because he made the decision that he had to pare down his insanely inefficient explosive moves in order to win rounds and in order to preserve himself. You know, yep. It was just such an inefficient game. And obviously it was that fight with what's his name? Little Tristan Connolly.
Yeah. Getting humiliated in front of a huge packed house by a featherweight.
Simply because the guy kept pressing him.
Yep.
Even if he probably still deserved to win, he looked bad because...
He looked bad. He lost that fight. Whether or not he deserved to win, he made sure that he lost that fight.
Yeah. Yeah. So just getting stuck in a on the back foot and having no recourse but super inefficient movement just burned himself out.
Yep.
What I find now is he just does a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what he does is more efficient jabs, front kicks. But when he feels the opponent like getting him into that mode, he will go apeshit for 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
He has learned the Jose Aldo move.
Yeah.
Of you try to overwhelm me, I'm going to scare the shit out of you. Like now is the time. So, I mean, I think he's for that reason, I consider him a reasonably crafty fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Who understands like how the sort of momentum of his fights goes, which is impressive for a guy who was fighting like an idiot for like 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
I'm going to pick him.
Yeah.
I think Oleksijic is just too foot slow, too cumbersome, too hittable. Obviously, there's reason to think he's going to get some work done because he likes to come forward. Pineda's going to spend a lot of this fight skirting the cage. But I think he's too predictable, and Pineda is so fast. He might run him into some takedowns, like Caio Bahalho did. Mm-hmm. He's going to use his jabs and his front kicks to keep him at bay. And I think he's just, you know, bigger and powerful. He's a true middleweight, Michel Pineda.
It is fascinating to know. Yeah, Pineda should have been a middleweight every day of his career. It is clearly exactly what he is.
Yeah.
It is interesting to note that Oleksijczyk is next to Benoit Saint-Denis, the other fighter on this card with the highest knockdown rate per punches thrown.
Wow.
On the card. And Pereira is actually one of the lowest.
Mm-hmm.
For all his speed and power, being a wildly sloppy early on meant that he was often not that functional at following up on any of his success.
Mm-hmm.
And taking his foot way off the gas in recent years means that he doesn't do enough to, like, often knock people down, mm-hmm. you know? He can hurt somebody and then just be like, okay, I'm going to go reset.
Yeah, Oleksijczyk hits with authority, no question.
He
hits with
authority and he goes after it.
Mm-hmm.
So, this will be fascinating because, I mean, part of me feels like fighting a bigger version of Tristan Connolly is not going to do Michel Pereira any favors.
That's true. He may not have actually solved that particular style matchup.
You know?
He adapted to it, but he hasn't really faced it since. He's faced people who have tried, but nobody that crazy aggressive.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
I am still going to pick Pereira just for the absolute speed of it. And Oleksijczyk, like, he really throws himself into getting almost knocked out.
Yeah.
Especially at middleweight now, where he just feels like he can be a big bully. He is just going out there head first, throwing both arms at the same time,
mm-hmm.
reaching for people, overextending, and just trying to go nuts. So I think Pereira can handle it, but we'll see. Like, the more I think about it, the more I think of Oleksijczyk is really like mm-hmm. just a really big Tristan Connolly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That might be really bad for Pereira.
Just pick him, you know?
All right, fine. I'll pick Oleksijczyk. I did not want to. I did not come in here prepared to pick him, but...
Pussy, you won't. You won't do it. You won't pick him.
I'm picking him.
All right. Suit yourself.
Michel Pereira opened at minus 147, currently minus 141. Oleksijczyk opened at plus 132, currently at plus 127. All right. That brings us to the stupidest fight on the card.
Well, there's one after this, which looks pretty stupid, too.
Is there? No, this is... Oh, wait.
Despain Parisian isn't stupider than... This is Linz Kudalaba.
Okay, yeah. No, you're
looking at the goddamn Wikipedia.
I'm sorry. Linz Kudalaba, not the stupidest fight on the card. The Spain Parisian is definitely...
That was the one you're... Okay.
Linz Kudalaba.
This one's decently stupid, too.
This is decently stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Really, though, Linz is just kind of a boring but functional light heavyweight.
Yeah, uh-huh.
He's a real swing and cling guy.
Yep.
Here's my one, two. Okay, I'd better clinch up now. Protect myself. And Kudalaba is just, he's always going to be who he is. He's always going to be a madman who will self-sacrifice if he thinks it will get him a win. You know?
And God bless him. Whatever God Romanians believe in, or Moldovans.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's one of the, something in that Kingdom Come thing there, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Hungary Czech is just, it's right there.
Yeah, same. I think that's pretty close to Moldova, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So
the god of the Cumans, bless him.
Yeah.
May his farm be safe from steppe raiders.
Yeah. I have to pick Linz.
Yeah, right.
It's not like fun and it's not daring. But he's got some size and speed and power. And he just doesn't make a lot of mistakes that lose the fight for him.
Yeah.
Whereas Kutalaba is just a dude who's, he's going to go out there and he's going to go bananas on you, and he might take you down. He might try, you know, he might land a couple of huge haymakers on you, but everything he does, it'll, if he takes you down, he will be right in a triangle. Like no question. He will like hook one leg up over his own shoulder just to make sure that the triangle is there for you if you want it.
He'll go into the triangle by trying to like bite your inner thigh.
Yeah.
And he just goes unconscious.
And if he's throwing hooks, then he's there to be hit hard himself, or he's there to be taken down and instantly submitted himself. Like, he's there's so just awesome. No maintenance of anything at all.
Yeah.
It is a minor miracle that he beat Devin Clark by decision.
Yeah. How did that happen?
It is literally one of two decision wins in his entire career. You know? So, yeah.
It's insane that he went to a draw with Dustin Jacoby.
Right?
Light heavyweight makes no sense.
It does not make any sense at all. But, yeah, I'm picking Linz.
Yeah, me too. That's Linz is reasonably good. Just period.
Yeah, he's like, just, his game is thin and a little boring.
Yeah, that's it. He's not like good. He's just like, he does a couple things reasonably correctly. He uses a jab. He keeps his hands near his face. He doesn't go crazy and overswing and overcommit.
Yep.
He's just a staid, kind of solid sort of fighter by light heavyweight standards. And Kutalaba is the very antithesis of that.
Yep. Linz opened at +112, currently at +111. And Kutalaba opened at -123, is currently at -122. All right. That brings us to...
Now the stupidest fight.
The dumbest fight on the card.
Ooh.
Robles? I don't know. Robles?
He's Cuban, isn't he?
Yeah.
I'm going to assume it's pronounced... Yeah, Robles or Robles?
Robles Despan against Josh Parisium.
Yeah. Robles? I'm going to call him Disrobe.
Yeah.
Disrobe to Spain. This dude is stupid.
Yeah.
This is a classic heavyweight signing. 4-0. Every single one of them an instantaneous knockout. Except for the first one where it was difficult to find the full fight. God knows what happens. Probably not much.
Oh, I found it. It's on Fight Pass.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a Titan fight. That's why I didn't find it on YouTube.
They just cage clinched a lot.
Yeah. Okay, so not much. And then he got the knockout. Every other one, literally like first strike of the fight.
Yep.
I guess he has like an Olympic Taekwondo background from what I saw.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like it.
No.
I mean, he's got the kicks to speak for it. He can throw a high kick real fast.
Yep.
Doesn't have like the footwork or the stance or the movement. The boxing, however, does look like a Taekwondo fighter.
Yes, he does have a Taekwondo fighter's boxing.
Yeah, and that it's dog shit. It's absolute dog shit. It's really just a question of like, it's a classic heavyweight debut fight. Can he instantly knock Josh Parisian out? If not, he'll probably lose, but not that decisively because Parisian is not very good.
Yeah.
But Parisian will wrestle, for example, which is a great thing to have in your pocket when both guys inevitably get tired 3 minutes into the bout.
Yeah. He has to be forced into wrestling, but he will do it.
Yeah. He wrestled Alain Badeau, for example.
Yeah, after Badeau kicked his ass for a round.
Yes. So it's basically that fight again.
Yeah.
Except that Despain is like worse than Badeau.
But bigger and more powerful.
Yeah, more powerful, but technically much, much worse. He is an absolute mess. So I don't know, flip a coin. I'll take Despain.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Spain too. I think the biggest thing is, honestly, he's just freaky huge. And I think Parisian is going to get freaked out.
Yeah, intimidated. Yeah. Oh, he's 6'7"? Like,
6 foot seven and with a 87 inch reach.
Imagine like, if he learned how to throw a straight punch.
Just ginormous. And I think Parisian is just not going to be able to handle it.
Yeah. Too scary.
Yep. All right. Odds on the fight. Despain is currently the favorite at -4. He opened at -417. He's currently at -326. Parisian opened at +294. Is currently at +274. It should not. This should not be that. Why? No. Because, like, all Parisian has to do is, like, get one takedown or survive 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And he will likely be looking at an opponent so gassed that if he can just hold him against the cage or brawl a little, he could find a way to win.
Yep.
That's it's just that I think Despain is so big and has wild reach and has such speed in his kicks that he will. It's a little bit like. Who was the awful former NFL heavyweight that we all hated?
Greg Hardy.
Yeah, he's a little like Greg Hardy, where like Greg Hardy wasn't actually good.
Yeah, I would say Despain is a substantially worse boxer than Greg Hardy.
But he was a giant who scared the life out of people.
Yeah, he really did. And so
Greg Hardy, just a lot of guys that early in Hardy's UFC run just like got panicked and couldn't fight him.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Psychology is real.
Yep. All right. That brings us to a flyweight bout. CJ Vergara. Asu. Oh, wait. No, I'm on the wrong thing again. Am I on the right?
Oh, that's it. That's okay. It.
Okay. I was just over on the.
I'm pleased that I've managed to shatter your confidence, but yeah, you're correct.
CJ Vergara. Asu Almabayev. And this. It's a pretty good fight. Good test for Almabayev after going out there and just running roughshod over Ode Osborne.
Mm-hmm.
Vergara is not as good an athlete as Ode Osborne, and has a loss to him even, but is a much better put together, more consistent performer than Osborne.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a good test for Almabayev. Like, here's another problem to solve. Here is a four flyweight, slow-footed, very durable, usually consistently aggressive, although not that much in his fight against Salvador, which you could argue was a better technical performance from him.
I did think it was a pretty solid technical performance from Vergara. Most people hated that fight, apparently.
Yeah.
I enjoyed watching him sort of problem solve that with his boxing.
Yeah. It showed a more technical layer to his boxing.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has to be wondered, like, what comes out of that fight. What is the thing Vergara showed in that fight? What do they look like against somebody who is not as messy and unstructured as Salvador and doesn't really just know how to pursue a fight?
Mm-hmm.
Where Almabayev is just going to go out there and like show a few rudimentary strikes and then get in on wrestling and see what Vergara can do with it. And I got to pick Almabayev in that. Like, it's not a deep game.
No.
But it is a very athletic and practiced wrestling game and grappling game that I just don't trust Vergara to be athlete enough to meet.
No, yeah. I mean, one of Vergara's defining characteristics is that he's very foot slow for a flyweight.
Yeah.
And he did his best to pressure Tatsuro Taira.
Mm-hmm.
who was just repeatedly able to shoot in and take him down outright.
Yeah. And if it weren't for the body language, I would argue he didn't beat Clayton Rodriguez.
Yeah. Honestly. Yeah.
Or Rodriguez. Like, mm-hmm. that was a very close fight where Rodriguez was the faster, more powerful guy, but just couldn't stop himself from getting overwhelmed and sort of shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't manage his cardio. But I don't think Almabayev is a much more confident, naturally functional fighter than Rodriguez,
mm-hmm.
who has sort of been raised to be like a, oh, you're an ultra athlete. We don't need to structure you really. You can just get away with athletic stuff. Almabayev is like, no, I'm an ultra athlete. I will go out and wrestle you. And here's my plan to get through my wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you got to take Almabayev.
Pretty much. Yeah. Foot slow guy. Getting drawn into shots from a layered guy, not only has good timing on the shot, but actually has a layered takedown game to follow that up. Yeah. Taking Almabayev for sure.
Almabayev is opened at minus 385, is currently minus 515. Vergara opened at plus 277, is currently at plus 405. I feel bad for Vergara. He's a solid fighter, and you know, it's going to be hard to keep winning at flyweight with his physical limitations.
Yeah.
That brings us to a woman's flyweight bout. Joanne Wood, Marina Moroz. And which of these fighters that shouldn't really be shot is the most shot?
Yeah. Sort of feels like a fight of shattered confidence.
Yeah, like for Wood, she's at least 38 at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And
to be honest, like, she pretty much looks the same as ever.
Yeah.
She never had a very dynamic game.
No.
She's always been quite plodding. She's just never been a really good athlete.
Yep.
And she never really added much to her game. And so now she's just slowed down. Yeah. Rose is a far more perplexing arc to her career.
Yeah. This is, once again, talking about like the idea that, of boxers just thinking boxing doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a boxer. She's an actual boxer.
She's not just a boxer. She is an Olympic boxing coach.
Yeah.
She is the coach for the Ukrainian Olympic women's boxing team. She got out. She just went out there and got like handily outboxed by Jennifer Maia.
Yep.
And she just falls into these rote mechanical traps that she just can't seem to think her way through.
Yeah, I mean, being a boxing coach doesn't necessarily mean she is herself a very good boxer.
No, it's true, but it's just weird to see.
Yeah, but she is super, super rote. She gets really locked into these patterns.
Mm-hmm.
The same shit with Karina Silva. It wasn't like she was getting outboxed in that fight, but the big turning point did come when she was like just pumping out, here's a 2-1, here's a 1-2, everything on the same rhythm.
Yeah.
Just did not respect that she was like fighting another person and got dropped, I think, on a left hook.
Yeah.
Or maybe a right hand as she was going for her hook. It was something like that. But it was just this, she just gets in this really, really predictable rhythm. And that results in either her getting hittable or her having certain fights in her career where just like nothing happens because her opponent isn't in range. And she just sort of pumps shots out into the air. I don't know. I mean, I remember when Moroz made her UFC debut, I swore she had more oomph. Didn't she? Actually, isn't this a rematch? Yeah, she armbarred Joanne Wood.
Yeah. Yeah, way back in, 2015.
The Karina Silva fight was a rematch, too. What the hell?
Yeah. A
different Karina Silva?
No, she beat Karina Silva way back in the regionals.
Yeah, and in that fight, not only did she submit Joanne Wood, I'm pretty sure she dropped her. didn't she, with like an uppercut or something?
Yeah. I can't remember now.
I'm pretty sure she dropped her. Like, I swear she had more, if not feel, then at least she was like committing to her strikes. But
yeah,
now she just has this really weird, like, shadow boxing approach on the feet to people.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, I mean, last time, because she got the submission from her back, I would say her only advantage here is possibly her top game. Because Moreau's is capable of actually delivering some power when she's in top position, as she did against Maria Agapova.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I just think I'm just not going to pick her. I'm just going to pick Joanne Wood. For I think she's got the reach. She at least still seems to have retained some feel for what her range is. Plus, she's got the kicking game. Unless Moreau
has the reach, actually.
Does she really?
Mm-hmm.
How much shorter is she?
Moreau's is 5'7". Wood is 5'6". Moreau's is actually taller and that has 2 inches of reach.
Bizarre.
Moreau's hunches a lot.
She really does. I don't know. I'm still picking Joanne Wood. At least she still looks more or less the same, just slower. I just never know what to expect out of Marina Moroz. I thought she was really impressive in that Maria Agapova fight.
Yeah.
And that is like her only impressive performance, like, since her debut almost.
Yep.
Every other fight's just been this really samey, getting nothing done, just pumping out nonsense kind of showing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just don't trust her.
All right. I'll stick with Moroz on the age. I'll go into the, you know, I'll die on this hill one last time. I don't really have anything to add. I just.
Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah. Wood is so slow and has so much trouble just handling any kind of, like, anybody who can keep a fight together
mm-hmm.
can find a way to beat Joanne Wood. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But Moroz might not be able to keep a fight together. So, yeah. I'll stick with Moroz, but it's really just kind of a last gasp. She's only 32, but who knows? All right. Moreau's open at minus 161, is currently down to minus 219. Calderwood opened at plus 144, is currently at plus 193. On that note, we're going to wrap things up. You can find me on Twitter at TheZaneSimon. You can find Connor on Twitter at BoxingBush. And we'll be back next week for UFC Fight Night, Tui Vasa versus Taiburo. What a joy that'll be. All right, adios, everyone.